This is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
Monday morning here on First Up. Welcome in. Thank you for being with us. Aaron Perulnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. You can find us anywhere. You can find us on our podcast. You can find us on the iHeartRadio Canada app, live on tsn1050.ca. Anywhere you want to find us, you can do it. And I highly advise you stick around for the next 3 hours because we have a jam-packed program full of quality content from an unbelievable sports weekend, whether it be in the city of Toronto or all around the world. Carlo, we talked about the menu that we have lined up, and I think no one was surprised to see Vancouver clean house. I mean, probably should have been something that was done far beyond what happened yesterday.
A
couple of weeks ago, but they've cleaned house. Travis Green, their coach, is gone. Jimmy Benning, he's gone as soon as the crowd starts chanting that you should be fired. I mean, I guess it hasn't applied to Matt Nagy and the Chicago Bears yet, but Jimmy Benning, he's gone too. And they go out and hire a coach in Bruce Boudreaux before a general manager. I don't really know what the hell they're doing there, but what did you make of it?
I think I was surprised at the timing of it. Obviously it was late Sunday night when the report originally came out. But really when you try to, dissect the timeline behind all this, anytime a fan throws a jersey on the ice, it's happened a couple times this year. It's like the ultimate karma that's thrown at you where the owner sees a jersey thrown on the ice and he decides to clean house. It happened in Montreal and now it's happening in Vancouver. And I think the moves that that were made were expected. It was surprising that Travis Green, who was just given a 3-year contract extension, was removed and they brought in a new guy, which means the team has to, double down in salaries to pay to a coach. Look, Bruce Boudreaux, I think, is an interesting choice for a couple reasons. One, it was a name nobody really talked about in potentially replacing Travis Green. And two, he has a track record of working and getting the most out of star players. And clearly two players that are headlining, I wouldn't say more, there's probably more than two players there, but two players that are getting a lot of the criticism in Vancouver are Brock Besser and Elias Pettersson. They have completely been irrelevant for this team, struggling mightily offensively. And maybe Bruce Boudreaux is the type of guy that can go in there and, push the right buttons. He did it in, where did he start?
Minnesota,
in Washington.
Washington.
In Minnesota, did it in Anaheim. And Vancouver's hoping for the same thing. Now, surprisingly, our Bradshaw, who was hired to bring in, who was hired and brought in at the start of the season as an associate coach, I would have thought that maybe they would have made a lateral move and given Bradshaw a chance to maybe take over as an interim basis and potentially as a full-time guy, depending on the success that he had. Just because, we just gone through a pandemic. There was two seasons with no fans in the stands. And, people talk about money that was lost in the league and how the owners just forked out more money to fix the problem. That's a surprise move to me. But clearly the owner stepped in here and went out and made the hire and made the changes. Bradshaw stays on the coaching staff. Maybe they'll actually use his strengths and allow him to coach the D and allow him to coach the penalty kill, which has been historically atrocious. I mean, the Vancouver penalty kill is operating at a percentage that the NHL has not seen in 25-plus years. Existence.
The worst penalty kill in 25 years through 25 games.
Yes,
64%.
And Bradshaw's bread and butter, where he's had a lot of success, like I played for him as a D coach, one of the best I've ever played under, and everywhere he's been, he's always had a really good penalty kill because that's been his strength as well, too. So he stays on. I wonder if he carries that role. Scott Walker comes in with Bruce Boudreau. But, I mean, Jim Benning's, you know, clock was about to expire. I mean, let's be honest. The fact that this guy lasted this long with how poorly constructed the Vancouver Canucks are. And you could tell the Vancouver Canucks were playing like they were expecting something bad to happen. And maybe this is, you know, the spark or, you know, the jolt that they're going to need to at least salvage somewhat of the season. I mean, it's hard to write off a season when there's close to 60 games left. But, you know, they've got to start somewhere. And hopefully this is the move that, I mean, I still they need to make more changes with their roster. But who knows? We'll see what happens, what Brucey can do.
People always point to St. Louis and going from worst in the NHL to Stanley Cup champion in the same season. And like, I have seen people in Vancouver do the same thing. And I'm like, I think it's a little bit different, fellas.
Yeah, very different.
A little bit different.
So that was an anomaly.
That was absolutely an anomaly. We'll talk to our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger, in about 30 minutes' time about Vancouver. And certainly the subject of the Toronto Maple Leafs will come up with Dregs as well in Leafs Breakfast after a weekend of a lot of excitement when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs in their game. Yeah. Let's go back to Saturday night against Minnesota, a game that the Leafs did not look good from the outset, but they staged a pretty remarkable comeback in the latter half of that game. It was led by Jason Spezza, who was filling in for Mitch Marner on the first power play, and he was getting some significant ice time, deservedly so. He was outstanding. He scored twice, had a ridiculous pass to Austin Matthews, who is as pistol hot as he's ever been. 8 goals in his last 6 games. And don't look now, Austin Matthews, after scoring again last night in Winnipeg, a game we'll get to in just a moment, just 5 goals back of Dreisaitl and Ovechkin for the Rocket Richard race. And
that's a 3-game stretch on the pace that he's on right now.
I think that's fair to say. And you know, at least have some games coming up where Matthews could continue that run. But
I just want to rewind a little bit and talk about what the biggest story going into the weekend was. I mean, the surprise announcement around Mitch Marner not being available to play, and the announcement was made during the broadcast on Saturday that he was not going to play Sunday too. And I remember the collision that we were all made aware of in practice between him and Jake Muzzin, where they had a little bit of a, you know, an arguing match, a little feud between them out by the bench, seemed harmless a little bit, especially, you know, some of the things you heard coming out of practice saying, oh, you know, bumps, bruises, you know, it's little fisticuffs, not fisticuffs, but a little scrum that these guys get into, but all signs point that he's going to be okay. It's like, okay, fine. He walks off, he looks good, and then all of a sudden he misses 2 games, and now you start to, the ears perk, and you're like, okay, what is it that he's exactly dealing with? Because Mitch Marner's not a guy to miss hockey games. Clearly, the only times he's missed games is when he's been really hurt. And that's a concern for the Maple Leafs. I mean, as good as things have been up until now, they've done it, you know, unscathed. You know, they haven't really suffered any major injuries. And okay, Ilya Mikheyev, it happened, you know, the last game of the preseason, and he's very close to returning too. But, you know, now you add the Rasmus Sandin incident last night. Is that something that could potentially be long term, or, you know, a length of time? But so you go into the game on against Minnesota and you really feel like the Maple Leafs are decimated a little bit, and you know the way that game started, you know, giving up 3 goals early on in the first period, and then 2 more in the second, you thought, oh boy, this is going to get away from it. And I tell you what, I give the Maple Leafs players a ton of credit for the way they battled back in that game. It was probably one of the best efforts, best comebacks, most like adrenaline and emotion that they put into a comeback game this year. And it turned out to be a hell of an exciting game. Both teams had great goaltending. There was chances back and forth. And, you know, they suffer a shootout loss. First time they've gone to shootout this year. And I think I walked away from that game saying, you know what? You could handle losing games like that all year, because you got a point, you didn't get the win, but you played hard, you fought hard, you played against one of the hottest and best teams in the league in the Minnesota Wild. And I tell you what, man, I had no idea Minnesota was that good, but they are fun to watch too. Like, you talk about two teams that are fun to watch right now, both the Maple Leafs and Mini. I thought that was a heck of a game. And if the Maple Leafs can lose games like that all year, you can sit back and say, well, you're not going to win all of them, but that was a hell of a game for us that we had a chance to win, but ultimately didn't. And then I talked to you yesterday. I mean, I was talking to people yesterday morning basically saying that, you know, guaranteed loss for the Leafs, because it was just, it was a tough game. I know when I played, one of the toughest back-to-backs to ever playing was Minnesota-Winnipeg. Always, no matter how good the teams were, it was always one of the toughest back-to-backs to play. And you just look at the way this schedule was constructed for the Maple Leafs, you knew if you circled this game was going to be the backup goaltender in net, playing without Mitch Marner. You exerted a lot of energy coming back in that Minnesota game to take it to OT. So now your travel at night is a little bit longer, plus the customs and the border crossing nowadays is going to be a little long. You getting into Minnesota late that day, into Winnipeg late that day. And Winnipeg on a Sunday afternoon, man, it's always a tough game to play. Always.
And Blake Wheeler's 1,000th game. I don't think that helps the cause either. I mean, they were fired up for their captain, too. So there's a lot of things that was working against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And Winnipeg has been one of those teams, too, that has come off a tough stretch. And Friday night, they lit up the score sheet against the New Jersey Devils, putting an 8 spot on the board. So they started finding their mojo again. And, again, I don't blame the loss on Joseph Woll. If anything, I think he would like that second goal back that snuck through him. I thought he was outstanding, though. I thought he gave the Maple Leafs a chance. The Maple Leafs hung him out to dry. I mean, you could tell that fatigue played a factor. I mean, if you go back a week ago, they were in L.A. They come home. It's one game. Then they go back on the road again. And then you put that back-to-back in front of them. And Minnesota and Winnipeg, you know, they have to be recognized as two of the top teams in the league with the rosters that they boast. So not only is it a tough travel schedule, it's a tough schedule when you're talking about the teams you're playing against. And clearly, Winnipeg took clear advantage of that scenario, and rightfully so. Their stars showed up. It was a big emotional night for Blake Wheeler. And, you know, they did what they had to do early on to put the Maple Leafs away. And, you know, you talk about the energy that the Maple Leafs had to exert coming back in that game, which, again, give them credit. They scored two quick goals to make it a game. If that scenario in the third period would have played out any differently, when you talk about, you know, the scrum between Dubois and Matthews, where Dubois should have walked away with an extra penalty, the Maple Leafs should have went on the power play, Rasmus Sandin doesn't get hurt, or if he does, that does happen, maybe there's an extended 5-minute power play where the down two goals, maybe they can get one, maybe two, cut it close. Instead, all chaos breaks out.
Absolute chaos. And if you missed what happened, so you referenced the Matthews and Dubois incident where there was basically a wrestling match where Dubois clearly was the aggressor. It was all over Matthews and hacking away at him and jumping on him and twisting him around. He should have been penalized for that. And shortly thereafter, you saw Rasmus Sandin skating through the Winnipeg Jets offensive zone, or defensive zone, I should say. And Neil Pionk sticks that knee out, a clear knee on knee, and Sheldon Keefe addressed it after the game. Maybe we can play that a little bit later, but he should have been penalized for that. So it was back-to-back plays where the Leafs feel it, and rightfully so, that there should have been penalties on Winnipeg, and that would have given them power play opportunities down 5-3 and a chance to get right back into the game. Well, I guess they were back in the game regardless, but a very questionable set of calls from the referees, or lack thereof from the referees, that really set off this whole fiasco in the last 10 minutes. Let's hear from Austin Matthews on if the game could have been managed better, and there were a lot of fisticuffs in the last 5 minutes.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't really know how to answer that question. I feel like you can kind of point the finger a number of different ways, but I'm not really sure I have an answer for you. Sorry.
Okay, that was not the right clip. Play the other Matthews on how emotions got started and delete that one from our system, please, Chris.
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think it just kind of bit of a snowball effect. Like I said, things just kind of spiraled out of control a little bit, and I mean, it wasn't really hockey in that third period. I mean, it was just a bit of a gong show. So, I don't really know how else to put it.
Gong show. That's exactly how to put it.
It's an appropriate word, right? It's an appropriate way to describe all the events that transpired. And you know, you can even go back the night before where late in the game, you know, Marcus Foligno drives the net and makes direct contact with Jack Campbell, and any contact with a goalie should be called a penalty, and that wasn't called a penalty. And it really makes you highlight, you know, referees and some of the things that they either do or don't do, because we're a quarter into the season, and this has been more than enough. We've had more than enough conversations throughout the early part of the season about refereeing and some of the way it impacts the game and the job that they do or the job that they don't do in some games. And just like players are held accountable, referees have to start being held accountable for the jobs that they do within the game.
Or don't do within the game.
And you know, because what you don't want to see is a game get out of hand, and then next thing you know, guys are either facing suspensions, taking liberties, getting hurt, and that's just not a good look on the game. And, you know, ever since last year or 2 years ago when Tim Peel was a guy that was the centerpiece of, or at least the center of conversation around, you know, some of the way, you know, people or the referees ref the game, it's been a spotlight on them. And the spotlight, let's be honest, has not been positive, because they're out there to do a job. And don't get me wrong, it's a very tough job at times, because, you know, you want to let the players play the game and then decide, you know, the outcome of the game. You don't want the referees taking full control and end up being the deciding factor of the game. But you can't, as a referee, you can't let things get in hand and miss not calling the obvious calls that are clearly written in the rule book. And when you do that, it allows for situations like that to get out of hand. And what bothered me in that game last night is the referees clearly didn't want to take control of it because they weren't calling what needed to be called. But then when the players tried to police it themselves, the referees wouldn't let them go at it and settle their own differences. They were stepping in right away and saying, no, 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 we can't do this, we can't do this, no fight, no this, no that. It's like you're either letting the players police it and control the games, or you're calling what needs to be called. And yesterday was the worst example of any of those things actually happening.
And if you wonder just how big that win was for Winnipeg yesterday, again, a 6-3 win for the Jets over the Leafs, here's some audio from Shifley, amongst others, post-game in the locker room.
Hey, boys. Is there anything better than beating the Leafs? Hey?
No.
Anything better? This going? For this guy.
Let's go!
Hey!
Like 10 feet tall.
Yeah. Victory! I mean,
Victory!
Yes. Oh, that's at the Grand Canyon, right, Christy? Oh, I remember that scene very well. I think Johnny Drama got 5 towns. When he celebrated that victory. But yes, a
Johnny's
big
bananas.
Win for the Jets. But I would argue, yeah, exactly. Maybe it was Johnny's bananas. But I will say, I was very impressed with the Leafs' fight in both of those games over the weekend. Could have packed it in against Minnesota, came back, got it to OT, got it to a shootout, you lose, whatever. Minnesota's third in the league in scoring. Minnesota.
I still
think about Mikko Koivu. And his Minnesota Wild teams, that's not the same team anymore.
Kirill Kaprizov, man, 29 points, fifth in league scoring right now.
Yeah, he's having a hell of a year. And listen, last night, the Leafs lost 6-3, but they showed a lot of fight going down 5-1. And fighting was a big story of that game. And we'll talk to Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, about that at 7:45. Amongst a number of big hockey stories around the National Hockey League, we have Fact or Fiction. Coming up on the other side, Korolnik and Koliakova with you here on TSN 1050.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
It's time for Fact or Fiction.
This hour, first up, brought to you by Sokolov Lawyers. Seriously injured? Don't put it off. Call Sokolov. Visit areyouhurt.ca.
They only get paid when you do.
Bang. And this segment, Fact or Fiction, brought to you by our producer, Arad Osfani.
Fact or fiction, babies are good for the Toronto Raptors.
That's a fact, apparently. I mean, Fred VanVleet turned around Norm Powell's struggles as with the Raptors and let him turn into playoff Powell when he was holding his baby. And now, as the story was released yesterday, Pascal Siakam has his breakout game of the season because he was holding... Whose baby was he holding?
His niece.
His niece, and it peed on him.
And we have the audio, Chris, if you can tee it up. Ready? Yeah, let's play. Let's hear why we asked this question.
Usually, well, my brother, he has a kid, my niece, and usually I don't like carrying newborns. Like, I don't know. I feel like they're just so fragile, and it's like, you know, like she's like 2 months old, and I've been like putting off just, you know, picking her up. It's like, I'm like, I don't know. But then, yeah, yesterday I picked her up and you know, yeah. And then she peed on me. I don't know. Maybe it was that. I don't know, man. And my brother kind of laughed about it. He was like, hey, you going to play what tomorrow? So I was like, hey. So, maybe it was that.
It's like Moises Alou. Remember Moises Alou used to pee on his hands before he, like, for every game to kind of, like, crisp him up a little bit.
Yeah.
So he was able to hold the bat a little
Gross.
Bit better. Same thing applied to Pascal Siakam in that basketball.
Like, you're talking about living in a COVID world where in the beginning it was like, you know, wash your hands, hand sanitizer, don't touch this, don't touch that. Could you imagine back in the day when Moises Alou was using hands that were peed on and grabbing the ball and throwing it back into the infield and
That's
other players
point.
Were touching it? It's like, what the hell's going on here?
I pee on myself before every show. That's why the quality of First Up is
you shower.
As good as it is.
Yeah.
That's right.
You pee, live disgustingly.
Yes. Golden shower. Golden shower.
Golden shower, yeah. Pee into the wind. That's right.
The king of the golden shower, Rod Asfandi. Yeah. What's next?
Hey, man, people pay me a lot of money for those golden showers. Okay. That's not good. <really. laughs> Fred, fact or fiction, Fred VanVleet is an all-star.
I mean... Are we saying this? Are we saying fact because he's a Raptor and we watch him all the time? Because, I mean, I'm going to say fiction because I just don't see, like, he's a good point guard for the Raptors, but is he a great point guard up against all the other great point guards in the league? I don't know. I mean, we were talking about this last year, and even though he was having a great year alongside Kyle Lowry, he wasn't even an honorable mention for the All-Stars selection. So what would change this year?
It's going to be close. I mean, there's a lot of really good guards in the East. We know that. We know that Trae Young will be an All-Star. We know that DeMar DeRozan will be an All-Star. Hell, DeMar DeRozan might be an MVP candidate. He is playing unbelievable basketball for Chicago. He's averaging 26 a game for the
Crazy.
Bulls, who I think are first in the East now, or close to it. They're playing unbelievable. And I think Zach LaVine will also be an All-Star with the Bulls. We know Tatum. We know Jimmy Butler. We know Brad Beal. I mean, Brogdon's having a good year for Indiana. It's going to be tough for Fred VanVleet. That being said, I think he will be an All-Star. Right at the end. What's next, Rod?
Fact or fiction, the Lions should bring back Dan Campbell.
Oh, there's no doubt he's
5-year
coming
deal.
Back. That's 7-year deal he got.
Is it a 7-year deal or a 5-year, yes. Whatever it is. He's coming back.
He got
sure.
a 7-year deal, so that is 100% fact. And he got his first win of the season last night, which probably means he went home and ate a lot of kneecaps for dinner.
Mm-hmm. You little sauce them up, a little salt and pepper on those kneecaps. Can't possibly find a better meal.
Fact or fiction, Ron Rivera should be considered for Coach of the Year.
I'm going to say fiction to this because Ron Rivera is just such a lovable guy. I mean, he's a very likable guy as well, too, across the NFL. And I think
lovable
you cheer
and
for, yeah, you cheer for a guy like that. I mean, for everything he's been through and, you know, the great success story that the Washington football team is right now under Taylor Heinicke. I mean, yeah, he'll get the like and the love support. But for NFL Coach of the Year, I mean, look, as much as I trash on this guy, the Arizona Cardinals have won two games with Colt McCoy as their quarterback on the road to improve to 7-0 on the season. So Matt LaFleur is going to be another guy that gets honorable consideration. I mean, Bill Belichick's going to be a guy.
Belichick's the coach of the year right now, for sure.
So I don't know if Ron Rivera is actually a real candidate for that.
Washington now 6-6. They are in the mix for playoff spot. They've been playing really good football lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no denying that. And you know,
remember when Chase Young went down with an torn ACL?
Young,
people ripped them off.
Fitzpatrick right? also was injured earlier in the year. The favorite to win coach of the year is Belichick, followed by Kingsbury. Matt LaFleur is plus 600. Zach Taylor is plus 1,000. So those
Not
are your top
yesterday.
Four. Yeah, I mean, that seems a little bit far-fetched at this point, but you never know what happens over the last 5 weeks of the season. Give us one more, Rod.
Fact or fiction, going for two was the right call by John Harbaugh.
That's a tough one because we know how banged up Baltimore's defense was. Marlon Humphrey went down. I mean, the amount of injuries that franchise has suffered this year. It's almost mind-boggling that they're in the position they are in the AFC right now. Like you would think that considering everything that they've endured, they would be in a lot worse standing. But I still think it was the wrong choice. I mean, Justin Tucker, he's your kicker. He's going to make the extra point. You go to overtime and you see what happens. They love putting their faith in Lamar Jackson, and unfortunately this was an incident that just didn't work out for Baltimore. I do think it was probably the wrong call. But hindsight's 20/20, right? I mean, if they got it, it would be the right call. So it's a tough one.
I'm fact on this. I think that was 100% the right call because if you watch that game, Baltimore had nothing going for them offensively. Pittsburgh was making life hard on Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson had a hard time completing passes. And more John Harbaugh touching it, which I didn't even know, but they were depleted at corners. They had no corners left to play back on defense. So this is a chance for him. This was his opportunity to preserve the health of his football team and give his football team a chance to win the game when they were generating the most, the most confidence in an offense, late in that game. And let's be honest. It was a drop ball by Mark Andrews, and it was a rush play on Lamar Jackson that maybe let him overthrow it a touch, but they had they called the right play. They just didn't execute it. So I love the call. That was a coach understanding where his team was positionally, the momentum they built on that last drive to tie the game, and basically saying, look, I'm not going to take my chances in overtime and put my defense back out there in case I don't get the ball. Let's go for the win right now. I love the aggressiveness by him.
Adam Schefter reported on Friday that this will be Big Ben's final season, and Roethlisberger was asked about it after the game, and he's like, we'll see what happens, but, Schefter doesn't make things up. Well,
no.
Generally speaking, Schefter is spot on, and my assumption is that this will be Roethlisberger's final year.
He should just retire now.
I mean, he had a pretty good game yesterday. Deontay Johnson, a couple of touchdowns, a pretty impressive showing against, a beat-up Baltimore D, but, still a quality opponent for Pittsburgh, and they were able to pick up a win going to 6-5-1 and keeping their playoff hopes alive for at least another week. The easiest way to win Raptors tickets is by following at TSN1050 on Instagram. You can find our latest giveaway post and tag who you'd bring to see the Raptors versus the Magic, plus a $100 vanilla Visa prepaid card from Petro-Canada. That is a tongue twister. A winner will be announced right here on First Up tomorrow morning. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, will join us in 10 minutes. No shortage of topics to get to. The weekend that was for the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Vancouver Canucks clean house, and Alexander Ovechkin scores again, number 750. For AO, simply unbelievable. First Up continues.
Wow, nice.
First Up continues, TSN 1050. The Arkells, they will be playing the Grey Cup halftime show next Sunday, and the Grey Cup, I guess the teams playing in the Grey Cup were determined yesterday. Unfortunately, the Toronto Argonauts losing to Hamilton. Hamilton will represent the East, and Winnipeg beats Saskatchewan, so it will be a rematch of the 2019 Grey Cup. Lots of Argos-related stuff going on over the weekend. We'll detail it and discuss it with our CFL insider, Dave Naylor, when he joins us at 9:30. But it was Tiger Woods who stole the show again at the Hero World Challenge, and he wasn't even playing. It was Victor Hovland who ultimately won the tournament. But seemingly every single day, Carlo, new videos emerged of Tiger on the range. Tiger ripping drives. Tiger with Bryson. Tiger with David Faraday and Steve Sands at the broadcast booth talking about what was going on with his body, how he was feeling. Let's take a listen, and we'll ask you to interpret exactly what he means.
Today we heard that you were hitting drivers on the back of the range. Anything you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I can hit it. It just doesn't go as far.
Right.
The power's not there, but I can hit drivers. I can hit any club in the bag. It's just, you know, unfortunately, I'm not to the point where I can hear it land.
Right.
So I'm okay.
He is so full of it. It's unbelievable. I don't believe a single word he's saying. We were talking about this last week. He is pounding drives. You could see it. I mean, if you watch enough Tiger videos over the years, he's still smashing it. This guy is going to play in the PNC Championship in a couple of weeks. I don't think there's any debate about that. And he is going to be rocking and rolling in time for April, walking down Magnolia Lane looking for another green jacket.
Dude, your obsession around the news around Tiger Woods is crazy.
I'm obsessed. Like, I'm obsessed.
You and Jeff McDonald should have your own Tiger watch parties. Like, the way you guys get so excited anytime Tiger says something is really comical. Because, look, I mean, is Tiger coming back and playing golf, you know, a sign of great news? Yes, 100%. I am not denying that one bit. But nothing of what I heard in his interview with Sands makes me feel even better about believing he's close to returning to the PGA Tour. He talked about difficulty that he's having getting through the endurance of playing golf. He said
he's lying. He's lying.
But why do you think he's lying?
Okay, I'll tell you why. Because he is setting expectations so low for himself. So when he wins,
it looks greater?
Exactly. It's like the greatest accomplishment. Look at me. He's fine, dude. I'm telling you. He's good to go. He is just setting the bar so low. It's classic.
Dude,
classic.
He talked a week ago how he's not even at the halfway point of his rehab.
True. I don't buy it.
And you're worried about this guy coming. Look, everything that we've seen of him hitting balls, he's standing still. Okay, in the fairway, he's got a cart right beside him, which means he's even said about the ball's not going anywhere. This guy suffered a life-threatening leg injury, and you think he can just go out there and play a full round of golf and walk the golf course and hit the ball from back tees and play with the big boys?
Come I don't
on,
think.
Man.
I know. There's
you
no
know.
Doubt. I'm actually resolute in my belief. I am resolute in my belief about this. And listen, we'll see how it all plays out. We're going to see him in a couple of weeks at the PNC Championship. He can take a cart there. Charlie will be playing with him. So Charlie's going to be playing from the forward tees, and he's going to be hitting a lot of the drives. But listen, I think the demise of Tiger Woods is far exaggerated.
I think the PNC is a tournament he can actually play in because, like you just said, you're allowed to take a cart on that course. He can drive to his ball, walk up to the tee, hit it standing still. That's something I can actually see. And he's got help. He's got help with his son, Charlie, who's probably going to be a guy they use a lot of his balls in doing so. So would it be great to see him back? 100%. I don't know, man.
Can you see it happening?
No, I cannot see it happening.
I just can't see it happening. I did see Al's brother yesterday at the Argos game. I'll tell you the story about that. And, man, is this guy a local celebrity or what? Some of the stories he was telling me, I mean – it's Al's brother. I mean, he's very recognizable. He's one.
I just don't see it happening.
I did see it happening in person yesterday. Man, that guy is a stud. I am a huge Al's brother supporter. You can look for him with Julia Teixeira at Leafs Lunch at noon today. And speaking of the Leafs, we have Leafs Breakfast coming up next with our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. No shortage of quality content to get in with Drex, who was part of the Leafs and Jets broadcast on TSN last night. First Up continues here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
I think it's just kind of a bit of a snowball effect. Like I said, it things just kind of spiraled out of control a little bit. And, I mean, it wasn't really hockey in that third period. I mean, it was just a bit of a gong show. So, I don't really know how else to put it.
Welcome into Leafs Breakfast here on First Up, here on TSN 1050. Aaron Kurolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. The Toronto Maple Leafs losing 6-3 to the Winnipeg Jets, but that is far from the story in this one. A wild third period termed a gong show by Austin Matthews. And let's welcome in our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Gong show, an appropriate term for what we saw in the third period, Dregs?
Well, maybe if you're participating, like Austin Matthews obviously was. For the rest of us, you know, it was, oh boy, didn't really see that coming type of period of hockey. But, you know, it elevated clearly when Pierre-Luc Dubois literally mauled Austin Matthews and they both got penalties. Toronto, I'm sure, as Sheldon Keefe explained, post-game believed and felt like they got cheated there, that they should have came away with the power play. So temperatures heated up a little bit there, but that was just a bizarre game kind of from start to finish with, you know, all the power plays and the offensive chances and everything else. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the Department of Player Safety does today, if anything. There were a couple of incidents there. Neil Pionk obviously taking out Rasmus Sandin, should have been a penalty on the play. And then retaliatory play, which saw Jason Spezza first screaming from the bench at the officials. You know, how do you let that go? And then his first opportunity, which is what, maybe a minute or two later, he clearly targets and goes low on Neil Pionk in retaliation. So I'm not suggesting, expecting that there could be supplemental discipline, but we know how they manage these things, right? So those clips of that game from that period would have been sent out to their group of 10, 12 guys. And at some point today, George Parros is going to have to decide whether anything requires more than what happened last night, perhaps a fine or, worst case, I suppose, a hearing.
Yeah, the Goon Squad definitely showed up for the Maple Leafs last night. It was a crazy game. Dregs, I guess the bigger question here is when do the referees actually act as members of the Department of Player Safety? Because I think it's the job that they do sometimes within games that let stuff like this escalate. And you can even, you know, rewind back to Saturday night. You know, Marcus Foligno drives the net, clearly, you know, makes contact with the goalie and Jack Campbell. Thankfully, he wasn't injured on the play, but no call made on the play. And, you know, last night there was a series of events where they just let stuff go that probably could have changed, you know, the emotions of the game if they just would have called it correctly. And I guess this just highlights some of the, and don't get me wrong, it's a tough job that these officials do, and there's some great guys that do actually officiate in the NHL, but when do they start getting held accountable for, you know, not doing their part to properly manage or at least help the Department of Player Safety do their job, which is, you know, a lot, not let things get out of hand like they did last night?
Right. Yeah, there would be reports filed by the officials, as we know. I mean, that's in the regular season and in the playoffs, just game by game in the National Hockey League. Eventually, they are held accountable, as we know. And this isn't going to appease the fan base of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But, you know, each referee, each linesman, the officiating crews are gauged game by game, you know, and it is a cumulative effect. And if you have too many misses, or there are too many asterisks beside your name for things that maybe should have gone differently in managing a game or just officiating a game, well, you're probably not going to qualify for extra money, which is postseason officiating. And so there is a level of accountability there. And if you look, again, historically, the number of officials that just flat out lose their jobs, they don't grab headlines at the end of the year, but it happens on an annual basis. I'm not defending these guys because there are clear misses that are unacceptable. And it's no different than us analyzing a player's play. You know, if a defenseman coughs up a puck or a goalie lets in a soft goal or something happens, you know, how many times did we pick on William Nylander early in his career for some of the soft plays that he'd make on both the offensive and the defensive blue line? I mean, that is the power of video replay. And in our case, we can, you know, just stop things and take a closer look and analyze that way. So media is really had an impact on officiating in general, but that's fine. Technology and cameras aren't going to become less and less moving forward. So these guys have to be sharper, just flat out. They have to be. And I don't disagree with you. That period last night in Winnipeg had some tone to it. Toronto pushed back in the second period, but that game was setting up to be an absolute whitewash, right? The Winnipeg Jets were steamrolling. It felt bad for Joe Wall at one point because he was effectively being held out to dry, hung out to dry. But if they call the penalty on Pionk as one example on that Rasmus Sandin hit, or as I said earlier, maybe the Leafs come away with a power play with Matthews getting ragdolled by Pierre-Luc Dubois, maybe there's not a different outcome. They still lose the game, but you don't have the dangerous situations which we saw last night.
Yeah, and the thing that I just don't understand, you talked about it, how we analyze, watching the game and say what we need to say about certain situations. How is there four referees on the ice that watch that play with Rasmus Sandin, who has the puck? Like, what else are you watching without the guy having the puck? And still nothing comes from it. And I think that's the frustrating part in all this. And I guess, my follow-up is, leading into the weekend, we heard the news of Mitch Marner not being available for the Maple Leafs. I was wondering if you have any information about, his potential return or what he's dealing with, and if you were able to get any information on the severity of what Rasmus Sandin could potentially be dealing with.
No, there wasn't a lot of info coming out of Winnipeg late last night specific to Sandin, other than, we heard Morgan Riley and others talk about, how much pain he was in, and I think we could clearly see that, couldn't we, as he was being helped off the ice to the Toronto Maple Leafs dressing room. So I'm sure he was evaluated last night, and that evaluation will continue, and it didn't look good. It's hard to doctor from afar, but when you see a player in as much distress as Sandin was last night, I think you can assume that it's going to be a while. Mitch Marner is a little bit different. I'm getting mixed kind of information here. On one hand, I'm told that, he's okay. He's going to be fine. In fact, he felt like he was going to play one of those two games, but he didn't play either game. We know it's an upper body injury. We don't know the specifics of that. But what I was told just prior to last night's game was that Marner come back into Toronto, and the medical team in the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto and the accessibility to the specialists, whatever, he'll get more looks today and make a final determination on where he's at.
Well, let's hope for some positive news both on Marner and Sandin today. And you talked about today being a busy day for the Department of Player Safety. Surprisingly, yesterday, Connor McDavid gets a 5-minute and a game misconduct for boarding. Gets kicked out of the game. You looked at the hit. I don't think there was an aggressive intent there, but clearly not a good play with Kempe being hurt and bloodied. Do you expect the Department of Player Safety to be busy, maybe handing down a suspension for Connor McDavid?
Well, and look, Carlo, as all the shenanigans of the Maple Leafs third period with the Winnipeg Jets was going down, within that 2-minute span, McDavid hit Kempe. So, yeah. There must have been paper flying and heads spinning in the room of the Department of Player Safety last night because they were hard at it. The one view that I was presented with last night, and this is not a determination that Connor McDavid is home free. You can clearly see that Dave Tippett thought that it was an overreaction, right? Now, I'm not going to say it was an overreaction, but, one opinion I received from somebody who's involved in the process said that it looked to them initially that Kempe kind of slid in front of McDavid at the last second. And it when you break it down, it does appear to be more of back shoulder hit and not a hit square to the numbers, which, Department of Player Safety will remind you see that often, and Department of Player Safety never acts on it. This one is elevated and draws our attention because it's Connor McDavid, and he got a boarding major, and he was thrown out of the hockey game. But I'd be very surprised if anything more comes out of that for McDavid.
In conversation with our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, it got pretty ugly in Vancouver on Saturday night. The Canucks lost 4-1 to Pittsburgh. The Fire Benning chance echoed through the arena, and the decision was made yesterday not only to fire Jim Benning, the general manager of the team, but also the head coach in Travis Green. What was your reaction to everything that transpired in Vancouver? Not to mention they have a new head coach, someone we're very familiar with.
Well, how can you be surprised, right, given everything that the Vancouver Canucks have suffered through to this point of the season? You know, something had to give. The dam had to break. I guess a bit surprised that Francesco Aquilini, principal owner of the Vancouver Canucks, basically cleared out hockey operations. Now, he's kept some very familiar faces on board to help manage moving forward. So Benning is out, along with John Weisbrod, and Stan Smeal, who's been there forever, will act as interim general manager. Ryan Johnson will get an elevated role. Chris Geary will probably get more responsibility among the management team. And we'll learn more today from Aquilini whether or not this buys the Vancouver Canucks a little bit more time. Are they going to continue on until the end of the season and then, you know, kind of rebuild their department from there? I'm sure Henrik and Daniel Sedin will have more of an active role, more responsibility, again, within management there. So surprised that Aquilini was so sweeping in making his changes. But look, Benning and Travis Green, that's low-hanging fruit. Low-hanging fruit. Normally, the manager gets the opportunity to fire the coach, but in this case, Benning has been there for 8 seasons now, and Aquilini probably didn't want to tie another coach and another contract to Jim Benning. And, you know, fairly shrewd ownership business management here, because, as we know, Travis Green got the contract extension, just a 2-year extension in May. So he's in year one of that extension. Boudreau comes in. He just wants to get back on an NHL bench. So he's under contract in Vancouver for the rest of this season and next year. So the contracts would match each other in terms of the length. So not a bad deal overall. And to go back to where we started here, Aaron, we can't be surprised. You know, look, Aquilini's going to get peppered with questions like, why did you wait so long to do this? And what happens if the club doesn't respond? And is this a roster that this management group is going to be able to pull apart piece by piece? It's going to be an interesting media availability today.
Oh, it definitely will. Drex, you reported yesterday that Boudreau's deal is for this year and for next year. Were you surprised to see them give that type of length? I mean, it's not a bare long-term deal, but no general manager is in place. So you think Boudreau is just kind of a placeholder for the next couple of years, and the GM might be able to bring his own guy in a couple of seasons afterwards? Like, how do you think that all plays out?
Well, look, I don't think Francesco Aquilini, as owner of the Vancouver Canucks, is worried about what the next general manager thinks. You know, he's just going to try and stabilize something and salvage whatever he can of this season for the Vancouver Canucks. There's still a lot of hockey left. I mean, they're nowhere near a playoff contending team. But you can still make improvements and make strides. He just needs a veteran voice. There's normally a bump factor when it comes to Boudreau, and you can almost say that about any new coach, especially a veteran coach brought in. Not surprised at the term at all, because, as I said, that fits the business model of what Aquilini and the Vancouver Canucks would be looking for. And nor am I critical of Bruce Boudreau. You know, we've seen this in the past. Right. I remember Paul Maurice going into Carolina and taking over there for his buddy Jim Rutherford on a short term. You know, that happens on occasion, especially when you're making a coaching change in season. And you know, we'll hear from Aquilini, as I said, with his media availability. You know, what if, you know, the Vancouver Canucks management group actually kind of turns things around here a little bit? That's normal, because the players aren't going to be happy. They're not going to be, you know, upset that they've got a new coach to listen to, or a new manager is now overseeing from the GM role. But they're proud men, and they're going to feel like they need to accept responsibility for what has been a horrendous start. And they do. There needs to be more accountability in that dressing room. And if there isn't, then Bruce Boudreau isn't going to have a whole lot of success in Vancouver.
Dregs, you know, you look around the league too. We've already seen, you know, 3 teams make changes, with Chicago, Montreal, and now Vancouver. I think another city that's feeling a lot of the heat right now, if you're the coaching staff, is Philadelphia, who has lost 4 in a row and winless in their last 8. What do you expect to happen in Philadelphia right now when it comes to their coaches?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fair to question, obviously. You go back to last season, and I don't know if you call it a feud, but it was tough love, if that's being polite, Elaine Vigneault and Carter Hart, and how that situation was managed. And Hart comes back this season as at least what appeared to be a start of the bounce back. I mean, he was terrific, and the reason why the Philadelphia Flyers were in a lot of games. Chuck Fletcher, general manager, makes some pretty bold changes, didn't he, to that lineup. And I, for one, obviously wrong to this point, thought Philadelphia was on the uptick. I thought the Flyers were going to be a decent team and certainly worthy of playoff contention. And, man, their last 10, 15 games, they haven't been anything near that. So I'm not sure what the management structure or the ownership structure, I should say, the Philadelphia Flyers looks like anymore. But there's got to be heat on Chuck Fletcher. Not that he's worrying about his job. Heat, I mean, to step in and do something. Vigneault looks like a real easy target for me, but I always say the same thing, you know, and it applies in Vancouver. And look, Bruce Boudreau has a longer coaching resume, obviously, than Travis Green. I'm in the camp of Travis Green. I think he's going to be a good coach. If you're Philadelphia, who is better than Elaine Vigneault and is available? Is it Rick Tocchet? Certainly the history of Rick Tocchet. It would be easy. You know, Rick Tocchet's working in TV. So, you know, with a simple phone call, you could make that happen. So, I mean, the temperature is hot in Philadelphia. And given the changes that we've already seen around the league in Montreal, now in Vancouver, the stuff that's gone on in Anaheim, et cetera, I wouldn't at all be surprised to see Philadelphia do something very soon.
Yeah, I keep beating a dead horse. Another reason why the cap sucks in the NHL is because teams that struggle can't make big changes, so they resort to firing their coaches.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. There's never any salary conversations or struggles when it comes to firing coaches. There's always a recipe for that. But quickly, Dregs, in some other news around the league, you talk about a team that's going to be encountering cap problems. The Vegas Golden Knights saw Jack Eichel start skating the other day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's an update there, but seems like Jack Eichel could potentially be a trendsetter in the NHL right now, as we saw Tyler Johnson just have the same surgery that Jack Eichel just had. So is this a positive moving forward? Is he ahead of schedule? Could we potentially see him back soon? Give us an update on that.
He's not ahead of schedule, but that's fine, right? I mean, the good news is that he's out on the ice, and he has been for a bit now. Shouldn't be shocked by that either, right? He was walking around very quickly after having the ADR surgery, the disc replacement. Same agent, CAA Hockey, represents Jack Eichel and Tyler Johnson. So Pat Brisson and JP Barry had done a ton of research prior to Eichel having his procedure. So when Chicago decided that Tyler Johnson needed a neck procedure, you know, it happened very quickly. It was, okay, well, you know, let's make a decision on what the best path is. And within a week, he was in surgery in Los Angeles and getting it done. As far as Jack returning to the Vegas Golden Knights, the sense is that you got to be careful, and you'd have to be careful with any sort of neck surgery, not just because this is new to the National Hockey League, but the belief is he's going to get to 80, 90% ready very, very quickly. And it could be that last 10, 15, 20%. That maybe slows the process towards the end. So that's why you're not going to hear the Eichel camp or the Vegas Golden Knights say that he's ahead of schedule. They're going to maintain that timeline.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a fun day for the TSN hockey insider community between what's going on with Mitch Marner, what's going on with Rasmus Sandin, everything in Vancouver. So we appreciate you taking this
Department
time.
Department of Player Safety.
Oh, no doubt. We'll be a busy man throughout the day. Thanks, Dregs.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too, buddy.
That is our hockey insider Darren Dreger. Yes, the Department of Player Safety. I wouldn't expect anything for Pionk on Sandin. I would be pretty surprised. Same goes
Seriously?
For Spezza. You think there's going to be supplemental discipline?
Yeah, I think there has to be. I mean, clearly
maybe
the refs
fine, but I don't know. Suspension.
I mean, you're going to say a knee-on-knee hit is a fine now? Like, that's a suspendable play.
I think it is a suspendable play. Absolutely. Will it actually happen? Maybe.
I think it has to happen considering what the referees missed. And look, I think what I said is appropriate in the sense that you have a Department of Player Safety that hands out, you know, or basically assesses what type of penalty needs to be handed out. Is it a fine? Is it a suspension? But the referees have to act as the Department of Player Safety too and actually call the stuff on the ice that needs to be called so that you don't have situations escalate that they did last night. Look, do fans love seeing rough and tough and, you know, some scrums and some fighting? Yeah, of course they do. But you want to see that happen organically, not because things get out of hand in a game. And, you know, it's. I just thought of this now, and I was thinking a lot about it last night because you saw the move Vancouver made. You're seeing, you know, moves that other teams may potentially be. And I was seeing Vanio has like 3 years left on his deal at $5 million a year. Like, could you imagine Philadelphia having to replace that right now? And it just makes me wonder, like, again, I've been pushing this message and this narrative for so long and why the salary cap bothers me in the NHL. I'm not against having the salary cap. It's the hard cap that I just can't stand because it ruins opportunities like this for GMs and coaches to help themselves get out of troubles by maybe making one move or two moves that changes the look of their roster that they can't because the cap doesn't allow them to. But when it comes to owners firing GMs and firing coaches, it never comes into play about the extra money they need to spend replacing those guys.
Because that's so just cash. That's not
exactly
salary cap applicable.
But how does that make sense? You can make those other moves and double down on some of the decisions because you've made mistakes, but you can't do stuff that actually you can't make changes that actually affect, you know, the outcome of the team's play and the roster, which again, like, I hate beating a dead horse here because it's so frustrating seeing a league like the NHL that is so fun to watch for so many fans that love the game of hockey that always have to get stuck with cap situations talk. Like the Vegas Golden Knights trade for a superstar, but when Jack Eichel gets healthy, they have to move a guy out in order to fit him into his roster instead of just adding to the group that they've established over there. And it just sucks that that's a big part of what hockey is.
No, I'm with you, man. It is. It's definitely something that I don't know if it'll ever will be corrected. I find it hard to believe that Gary Bettman's going to budge on this stance that he's taken since 2004. I mean, you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins selling for $900 million. I think they're doing something
$900 million.
And, you know, to be an owner in the NHL is a very profitable venture these days. And I think in some respect, you have to attribute that to the salary cap because they don't need to spend over. They don't need to pay a Giannis Antetokounmpo $50 million. So the owners like that, but is that good for the product?
Which is egregious, too.
Yeah. Is that good for the product on the ice? The answer is clearly no, but I wouldn't expect anything to change in spite of your best efforts.
Well, I know this is a conversation, too, that, you know, you are probably heavily invested in as well, but some of the things we saw transpire over the weekend when it comes to player changes and lineup changes and the whole gambling aspect, if the NHL wants to profit on the gambling market, they have to be more forefront.
Transparent
about these player injuries. Like, you think about Colorado, who at game time didn't play Kadri, Makar, and who was the other guy that they didn't play? Someone significant in their lineup.
Burakovsky?
I think it might have been Burakovsky. Mitch Marner, a game time decision. Like, these are people that are betting on this stuff. That,
game changers.
Like, the NHL has to adapt to this, especially if they want to profit from it. And this is all about growing the game, which I've been critical about. They don't do a good enough job in doing.
We have winners of the weekend coming up in hour three. We'll be joined by our NFL analyst, Mark Dominic, former GM of the Tampa Bay Bucks. So many great NFL stories over the weekend, including the Detroit Lions getting on the board. A big W over the Minnesota Vikings. Plus, we'll look ahead to an unbelievable Monday nighter between the Patriots and the Bills. We can't wait for that one. We can't wait for hour three of First Up, which is on the way next.